Well, I'm going to give an overview of the challenges in post-harvest handling of tropical fruits and vegetables, primarily from the standpoint of export from foreign countries to the U.S. We have a small tropical fruit industry here in South Florida. Also, there's a little bit in Southern California. Hawaii has traditionally had tropical fruit. It's actually declined in recent years. So you saw in the previous presentation that there's been a steady increase in imported fruits and vegetables to the U.S. over the years, and I think that goes along with the demographic changes. I've done quite a bit of work with the National Mango Board here in the U.S. the last 7 years. Which represents the importers and the retailers of mangoes, but also the exporters in foreign countries. And I was told early on that less than half of the people in the United States have ever tasted a mango. And another side of that thought is I work to some extent with the public supermarket chain, and the corporate vice president for produce, he told me that he fields a number of consumer comments and complaints that come in, and he fairly regularly gets word from some consumer at a public supermarket complaining about a mango and usually saying, what pesticide did you put on this mango, because it had a really bitter flavor. And the reason is they have no idea how to eat a mango, so why would they not think that you just bite it like an apple? And so they're biting through the skin, and they get the bitter compound. So, I mean, it tells you that people are willing to try new things, but we need education to hit the non-traditional consumer, the people who know mangoes, for example, or any tropical fruit and vegetable from their home country. They know how to eat it, but those who haven't tried it before need to know. So tropical fruits and vegetables that are marketed in the U.S. are primarily coming from other countries and exported to the U.S., mainly using marine transport, which is important because that's a long-distance shipment. You're adding a demand for longer post-harvest life to the products, and that impacts everything that you have to do with harvesting and handling. So we're getting a lot of these crops from Mexico, Central America, South America, Southeast Asia. Very small volumes, as I mentioned, produced in Florida, Hawaii, California. I suppose I should include Texas. I heard about bitter melon now a little bit being grown in Texas. You can find most any tropical fruit or vegetable here in Florida, around the Homestead area, south of Miami. But other than avocado and carambola, all in very small quantities, that's mostly being marketed just locally to local Miami area, southeast Florida, South Florida area. So the challenges related to exporting tropical fruits and vegetables relate to both the production factors and the post-harvest physiology of the crops, and how you have to manage those things in order to successfully get the crop shipped a very long distance. You have shipping durations that can go up to 4 weeks or longer, maybe 5 weeks even, from places in South America to the U.S. And for a lot of these crops, that really pushes the envelope. You're really challenging their potential post-harvest life to get them successfully to the U.S. in good quality. So I'll just go through some different categories that relate to the challenges I'm talking about. I don't want this talk to come off as very negative, it all being negative things that have to be overcome, because there's many, many success stories of people who are successfully importing these crops, exporting these crops. But these are the challenges that are being overcome. So first of all, physical damage. Many tropical fruits and vegetables are quite sensitive to physical injury, depending on their texture, how easily the skin is broken, how easily they can be bruised, things like that. And so if they're not a crop that's traditionally being run through a packing house like we think of for most of our large volume crops, then you have to start thinking about more about how that kind of handling affects the injury and designing things to overcome that. Post-harvest decays are an issue. A big part of that is that these crops being exported to the U.S., they have to be produced in compliance with our EPA regulations. And there's really very little in the way of fungicides that can be used to control the decay organisms. Probably the most important one is anthracnose on fruit and some vegetables. It's really a key post-harvest pathogen because it doesn't show up until very late in the life of the fruit. So you have an infection that occurs early in fruit development. A infection peg comes out of the spore, goes through the cuticle of the fruit, then an apersorium, which is like a shield, forms over that, and the infection lays quiescent because of natural antifungal compounds in the fruit peel until the fruit starts to senesce and ripen, and then later on, which means in the export market, then you see the effect of the decay. So there's a number of these types of diseases that are really difficult to control, and so it's a big challenge to overcome that. Food safety is an issue. When people start to try and export fruits and vegetables from tropical countries, as you heard in an earlier talk, tropical countries are more likely to be developing countries. So there's sort of a cultural aspect of that in order to satisfy the U.S. food safety requirements. These are some pictures I just recently took in a trip to Honduras. So this is a vegetable operation that quite large, actually. In an area with no electricity, very rural, but producing vegetables for the main market in the capital city of Tegucigalpa and also locally at the same time. So this is, where's my mouse? This is how they were washing some bundles of, in this case, is beets, not a tropical crop. They were just tossing these off a roadway into a stream that was going through a culvert under the road washing. This is up the hill, upstream, that same stream, and you can barely see it, but there's a guy up there in the field with a backpack spraying pesticides on a vegetable field up here. This is the same farm. This is part of their irrigation water source, and there's a horse grazing next to it, and then there's a field of cabbage, in this case, beyond it. And then this is the closest village to that farm, and this is some of the same produce as well as some home garden produce being sold by a vendor. And there's just the issue of going in and having to educate the people on what's required in terms of sanitary growing and handling practices and personal hygiene of the workers and things like that. A big area in post-harvest physiology, temperature is always what we come back to as the great factor that always has to be taken into account. In tropical areas, by definition, the environment is typically going to be warmer. The temperatures, the ambient temperatures during harvest can be quite high. Commonly 35, 40 degrees is not unusual. So you're starting with a product that's quite warm. And in order to get it through a extended post-harvest distribution system, it has to be cooled to a lowest safe temperature. So rapid cooling of the produce is critical. And that's, again, a shift. If it's a crop that traditionally is being grown for local consumption, you pick it, you take it home, you eat it, this whole idea of cooling the crop is something that has to be incorporated into the export system. Also, a number of these crops are subject to insect quarantine in the U.S., and one of the most common types of treatments to kill the insects that are the subject of these quarantines is applying heat treatment, either hot air or hot water. These are mangoes that have been injured by the hot water treatment. The treatment is 46 degrees for 60 to 110 minutes, depending on the size and shape of the mangoes. Immersion in hot water, 46 degrees. And it's sort of marginal. It's developed to kill the eggs and larvae of fruit flies, and maintaining the quality of the mangoes is secondary. So if it's not managed perfectly, there's the possibility of different types of disorder. You see the internal cavitation. That's actually the fruit as they're immersed underwater. There's no oxygen for respiration, so they can go anaerobic and start producing large amounts of CO2, which actually creates those air pockets. They get internal browning. They most commonly get first starting with lenticel discoloration, then a scald type of thing. So that's another challenge that has to be handled. If you talk to the mango industry, they'll tell you that all their quality problems are related to the hot water treatment. So a student of mine, Sharon D., did work on that, looking at the quality of mangoes with and without the hot water treatment. This is just one little snapshot. This is some volatile measurements of fruit that did and didn't receive the hot water treatment. And the bottom line there is there's really no difference if you start with fully mature fruit. And so the problem is that the industry is picking fruit less mature than the treatment was developed to be applied. And that's because they have long distances to get to the market, so they think they have to pick early in order to successfully ship. And that's what's caused their problems in reality with the hot water treatment. The other end of the scale is low temperatures. Tropical fruits and vegetables are all subject to chilling injury. And this is really not a concern in tropical countries because, you know, there's no need for these things to be exposed to low temperatures. They didn't evolve to withstand exposure to low temperature. There's no low temperature storage in general. But as soon as you start an export operation, now in order to reach the distant market, it's critical that you have temperature control. So you have to know the chilling threshold temperatures, which vary for each species, what the critical temperature is below which you can't go without starting to injure the crop. So one interesting thing in relating to chilling physiology is that the chilling sensitivity is greater at lower maturity stages, and the fruit get more and more resistant to chilling as they mature and as they ripen. So this all plays into this concept that the exporters are trying to get maximum shelf life out of the fruits and vegetables, so their tendency is to pick earlier. They have more problems with chilling injury. They have to figure out what the happy medium is, getting the fruit that are picked early enough that they're going to make it to market, but using a temperature that's not too low to cause injury. Chilling injury can be a huge problem. This is a mango example again. These are examples of the types of injury that can occur from low temperature. Probably, from my standpoint, the most important one is failure to ripen normally. And that's first manifested by a loss of aroma compounds. So you can get a fruit that's just been slightly chilled and it loses its aroma, which is a major component of the total flavor of the fruit. So you get tasteless fruit as the first result of chilling injury before you see any nasty visual symptoms. And this is, again, this is more work from the same student, Sharon D. And what this is showing is how, where's my mouse? These were Kent mangoes stored at 5 degrees, which is a fairly severe chilling temperature. Their threshold is 12 degrees. So these are fruit that are being stored in chilled conditions. And you can see that as the exposure time increases, this figure is showing that the major change is loss of aroma. So the fruit become less and less tasty with exposure to a chilling temperature, even though in this case they didn't show any visual symptoms. This is from other work that we did with the mangoes. This is Kent again, although we did it also with Tommy Atkins and Hayden and Kit varieties. And this is just showing an example of the types of symptoms of chilling injury. So these are fruit that were stored at 10 degrees, one of the range of temperatures that we used. 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And the interesting thing is here that it's not until you transfer the fruit to a warmer temperature that you start to see the symptom development. So that's also something that plays into the education effort that needs to take place, because fruits and vegetables go through numerous handlers' possession typically. And until something that's been chilled is finally transferred to a warmer temperature, which may not be until it's ultimately put on display in a retail store, that it'll start to manifest the injury symptoms from chilling injury. So all those previous people, as the product is passing through their hands, they don't see anything wrong. The product looks perfectly fine. So they need a little convincing that they're doing something that's damaging the fruit, even if they can't see it. This is just some more of the types of chilling injury symptoms with the mangoes. So another symptom, this is something that we're working on right now with a research project. This is Xiaoling Zhang is a visiting scientist from China. This is some of his work with the Zil variety, which is a Florida cultivar, not a major cultivar in international trade, but it's grown in his area in southern China. Another manifestation of chilling injury is this internal discoloration, which doesn't always occur, and the research that we have going on actually in Ecuador and Peru right now is to see if it is related to a predisposition of the fruit based on earlier nutrition while the fruit was developing. And Bruce Schaefer's here in the room. He's involved in that project, applying high nitrogen and low calcium to mangoes during fruit development, and see if that is what is predisposing them to this symptom that appears to be chilling related, because as far as we know, it never occurs until after the fruit have had some kind of exposure to refrigerated temperatures. So here's just a few more chilling injury. This is papaya chilling injury, again after storage at 10 degrees. With the papayas, depending on the cultivar, 12 to 15 degrees is the lowest safe temperature. You start to go below that. The lower the temperature, the faster you can get the injury occurring. This is banana chilling injury. In the trade, they call this underpeel discoloration. If you've ever seen bananas with sort of a smoky appearance in the peel, it's discoloration of the vascular strands within the peel underneath the surface that you can see that grayish-brown color. Here's avocado chilling injury. Usually you first see discoloration internally in the vascular tissue, again like the banana peel, but eventually it becomes a scald-like appearance on the outer portion of the fruit. So the bottom line is that chilling injury leads to poor quality for consumers. So maintaining the temperature so that you get the fruit cooled as fast as possible, but not below their chilling threshold temperature, that's the key challenge to overcome in exporting tropical fruits and vegetables. And the other point to make with that is, for export operations, the required infrastructure for proper post-harvest temperature management isn't always available. So you get a common situation where someone from outside the country of production comes in to set up a export operation. They bring in outside technology, and then they're working with the local population because that's where their labor force is, and there's an educational aspect going on that everybody has to become attuned to why it's so important to manage the temperature of these crops that are going into the export market. So this is the big dilemma that the exporters have to deal with: the shipping distance versus harvest maturity. So the inherent problem is you're adding weeks to the normal post-harvest life that you're expecting out of the product. So you want to get the product to your receiver in a condition that they're going to find acceptable, and you never really hear of a container or a trailer load of produce being opened at the retailer, at Kroger, at Publix, whatever, and they're going to say, no, these fruit are too green or they're too hard. We're not going to accept them. That never happens. On the other hand, if there's any soft, overripe fruit, if there's any bruising, if there's any decay, even a few percent decayed fruit, they'll reject the whole load. So that means that there's going to be a tendency on the part of the shippers to err on the side of starting out with less mature fruit. And that's really a problem because it ends up with lower quality in our markets here. And you couple that with the fact that we have a large proportion of our population that's going to be trying these tropical fruits and vegetables for the first time. They don't really know what to expect. And if the first time they taste it, it's tasteless, or it develops chilling injury in their home kitchen, they're going to say, I tried fill in the blank and I didn't like it. And so they may never try it again. So you can lose a future customer for life by this kind of approach of shipping things to get them to the market only looking good but not necessarily tasting good. This is more mango example. This is from a survey of mango exporters and importers that we did over about a year and a half period. And part of it was looking at all of the practices in the export markets. We also, though, took samples weekly throughout that time from supermarkets in Florida and California. It was a joint University of Florida, UC Davis project. And this is just listing of soluble solids contents. Each of those is an average of a supermarket sample. And the levels range from very low, like 9%, to very high, over 20%. We were considering that 16% soluble solids is a good quality mango. And if you look here and see how many of the samples reach that level, it's really less than half. And in some cases, we had no samples from an entire country's export season, Ecuador and Brazil, having any mangoes in the stores that ripened and had that level of soluble solids. From Mexico, you get a lot more because they're closer. So the countries that are farther are having a harder time getting fully mature mangoes to market. Mexico, which is closer, is more able to do that. They can harvest the fruit more mature, and they're only a few days from the U.S. border, wherever you are in Mexico. So that's the consequence of that. So for many parts of the year, the mangoes we're getting here in the U.S. are not really very good quality because of this dilemma that they have, trying to get them to market in good condition and at the same time with good quality, which they're not doing a great job of in some countries. So, well, this is basically an overview of what I was just saying. The problem is how to avoid overripe, soft, bruised, decayed fruit on arrival in the U.S. without shipping fruit that are immature. So the immature fruit are more sensitive to heat injury. They're more sensitive to chilling injury. So you've got a double whammy. You're trying to help yourself by sending fruit that are going to look good on arrival, but in fact, you're causing more problems by using fruit that are more susceptible to high and low temperature injury. and those fruit are not going to develop full flavor. So the solution has to involve delaying the harvest, packing house sorting, actually to remove the fruit that are too advanced so that you're not going to have those fruit that show the bruising and the decay, or are more likely to show those problems. And then you have to have perfect temperature management in order to get those advanced maturity fruit to market. Now, even that may not be enough, so you need supplemental treatments. Coatings are often used to reduce water loss. It's also possible to have coatings that are semi-permeable to the respiratory gases of the fruit or vegetables, so that you can create an internal modified atmosphere that will further slow the metabolism of the fruit. Ethylene scrubbing is something that's done fairly commonly with some crops, putting in ethylene scrubbing materials that will keep the ethylene concentration within the marine container low, which will slow down the senescence and ripening. SmartFresh or 1-MCP is another approach to that that's been tried in a lot of cases, not with a whole lot of success getting it to work on a large scale. That's a compound that blocks the ethylene receptors in plant tissue so that they become insensitive to ethylene. Modified atmosphere packaging, controlled atmospheres, all of those are approaches. Using controlled atmosphere or modified atmosphere containers would actually work. There's a lot of research showing what the optimum atmospheres are for many different fruits and vegetables. But the problem is twofold. There's quite a large upcharge for using those types of containers, on the order of $1,000 or more per shipment, that they may not want to have to pay. Also, there's a limited number of those, so for large volume crops, there literally are not enough of these types of marine containers to handle the volume. So I think modified atmosphere packaging is maybe an option that should be looked at more. It can be done on various levels, individual cartons, pallet level, and that might be something that would help in getting better quality, more mature fruit shipped to market. We did some research on that with mangoes again. I'm sorry, all my examples are mangoes, but that's the tropical fruit I work with mostly. This is Renard Bender, was a PhD student from Brazil. And we were looking specifically at this. Brazil is about a three-week voyage from the East Coast U.S. market, so that has to be built into their system. How are they going to get mangoes from Brazil to the U.S. with 3 weeks transportation part of the option? And how are they going to ship tree-ripe fruit that have begun ripening on the tree? So he was looking at controlled atmospheres. So as I said, he worked out. We know what the atmosphere is for tree-ripe mangoes: 3% oxygen, 15% CO2 for 3 weeks. Works very well. It can be done at 8 degrees. I mentioned earlier that 12 degrees is the threshold temperature for mangoes, but that's for green mangoes. As they ripen, the temperature goes down. The CA also reduces the sensitivity to chilling injury. So the combination of that atmosphere and the lower temperature, you could get tree-ripe mangoes to the U.S. And so I'm finishing with that. I just want to thank the collaborators. Some of the work that we did shown here, Fernando Maul in Guatemala, Cecilia Nunez, who's at University of South Florida, Liz Baldwin, USDA here in Florida in Fort Pierce, Mark Reitenauer, some of that work in Honduras, and Luis Cisneros. Mark is also in Fort Pierce at the university's research center there. Luis is at Texas A&M. Xiaoling Zhang, I mentioned, is the visiting scientist. And the graduate students, one I didn't mention during the talk, is Emily Prue. She did the work with papaya that I showed the picture, the National Mango Board, and USAID HortCrisp project. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Jeff, on your thing of your on the mangoes.
Yeah.
Was that
It was any variety coming from that country. So we were taking whatever was in the stores, and we did document what varieties each one was, but it's not included in that figure. You know, but you know predominantly what's coming from those countries. I mean, you know more or less what varieties we're talking about. Yeah.
You mentioned the shelf life is about 5 days. Is that, you think that would be sufficient for the one in mango here, 5 days of connection with the CA story?
Well, at the time that it gets brought out of refrigerated storage, in most cases that shouldn't happen, is not going to happen until it reaches the retailer. So at that point, 5 days is more than enough to go through their system. Yeah.
So the 3 weeks from Brazil, does that include transportation in country?
No, when I say 3 weeks, that's only on the water, like 20, 21 days. So you talk about meeting shipping schedules for the container companies. You can easily add another week to that, even more in some cases if, you know, you're not lucky. So that's what they're dealing with, yeah. That's the longest transport. Then Ecuador and Peru would be next, and Central America is really only a few days away, and Mexico very close. So it's the South American mango exporters who have the biggest challenge. Yeah.
I think that in terms of that with the modified atmosphere, it's going to be very cultivar dependent, because Tommy Atkins, which I'm assuming you did,
right,
that was out of Brazil, doesn't taste like anything anyway, so you don't get any off flavors. But if you start using mangoes with a lot of volatiles,
yeah,
it really changes them, and that's going to be a whole different thing. That's why.
The procedure for determining what's the optimum atmosphere for any fruit or vegetable, it's based on how low can you go with oxygen, how high can you go with CO2, and the fruit can recover when you take them out. So part of the evaluation is, do they recover and ripen normally, including developing their normal flavor, which is taste and aroma, so including the aroma. Yeah, I agree about Tommy Atkins, but what are you going to do? They love it. The growers love it. Yeah.
Is there a way, like as you were saying, when you send something to the receiver, they're never going to reject you if you're sending them rock hard green things.
Exactly.
Which I agree 100%. But the problem is, then aren't we educating the wrong people? Isn't it? They should be educated that we should work on trying to get them to understand that if you have to throw out maybe a little bit of, if there's loss on their end, that's still better for the industry, because the mangoes that are arriving that way too cold.
I completely agree. We think alike on that. And I was probably remiss during my talk in focusing on how education is needed at the origin side. Definitely education is needed, especially with the retailers, because they're bringing in new crops that are new to them in some cases as well, and they want to compare it to something they already know. So I don't know how many times I've told people, treat them like bananas, because they know bananas, and everybody really knows that bananas are chilling sensitive, and they go to great lengths to avoid exposing them, things like that. But if they don't know, I mean, we had retailers who were holding mangoes at 5 degrees in the DC. So it's just another couple of days of chilling exposure, and it doesn't help. And then, you know, you get some of those fruit from our market basket survey, they wouldn't ripen, they couldn't ripen because of being immature and chilling injury. Yeah, Bob, I think probably the